Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
Welcome to Musical Storyland. In just a moment, we are to hear a musical story concert by the music maestro. He's going to tell us about all kinds of music, music that leaps, music that soars, music that whispers, and music that roars. So now sit back in your chair and close your eyes if you want to, because this is a listening hall, and it's sharp ears that count. Yes, the harder you listen, the more you'll hear.
A little blast from our radio past. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Still to come on the program today, Music of Hope from Survivors of the Holocaust. And before we get too far from our Fela Kuti segment, let me just remind you that information, details about Jumpin' Funk, the party, and Red Hot and Riot are on the Soundcheck page of our website, WNYC.org. Right now, though, you can call it No Music Left Behind. Two giants of the classical music world, Carnegie Hall and the Juilliard School, have joined forces to create a program to bring elite musicians into New York public schools. Will it work? We turn first to Drew McManus, orchestra consultant and a blogger on artsjournal.com. Drew, the idea is that these fellows, not necessarily men and not even necessarily from the Juilliard School, will get high-level training, they'll perform at Carnegie Hall, and they'll get guidance from teachers on how to teach music in the public schools. How is this idea different from any number of other music education initiatives that we've seen?
Hi, John. I think it's a little bit different from the standpoint that you have two what you called music giants. Carnegie and Juilliard have gotten together with the New York public school system to put this together to promote both of the organizations and try to create a greater sense of cultural awareness, I think.
So in your view, is the goal to, you know, really do something for the survival of these two institutions, Carnegie Hall and Juilliard, as well as creating more well-rounded musicians?
I'm sure that has a part of it. I think that the two organizations were also interested in creating some partnerships just to strengthen their relationship with each other, and this seems to be one of the first educational forays in that direction.
Right. I also noted several months ago that when Ara Guzulemian, longtime programmer at Carnegie Hall, left Carnegie Hall, he left to take over at the Juilliard School, so perhaps
right.
Not too surprising that this initiative followed. It starts in January with 16 musicians who are part of this kind of fellowship. The goal, though, by the third year is to have 50 fellows, each of them getting a $24,000 annual stipend, health benefits, and practice space, which sounds like a pretty good deal for emerging musicians. But what kind of impact can that have on a massive school system like we have here in New York?
Well, that's pretty tough to say. I think it's a little unclear at this point also exactly what the fellows are going to be doing, because it hasn't really been decided whether they're going to focus more towards general music education or instrumental instruction. And I think one over the other will definitely have probably more impact on individual children's lives.
Right. And certainly, you know, that really colors the whole program, doesn't it? I mean, if you're doing general music education, that's for everybody. If you're doing instrumental performance, well, that's going to be for, you know, a kind of self-selecting, very targeted group of students.
Right, and I don't think there's probably any one universal answer that one solution will be better at one school than another. I always tend to favor the latter, though, of being able to offer individual students the opportunity to create some kind of artistic venue or learn something about themselves or give them an option in life that they may not have had before. I hope they move in that direction.
Well, that actually is a cue for me to bring into the conversation Thomas Wolfe, who is author of the Magic of Music Initiative, a 10-year research project funded by the Knight Foundation that looked at how successful orchestras were, or were not, when they were reaching out to new audiences. Thomas, first of all, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you.
What works in terms, I mean, after 10 years, you know, given the choice between a sort of broadband, you know, general music education aimed at everybody, or something, as Drew was just talking about, something very targeted to a smaller number of kids, but actually getting them to play an instrument or sing in a chorus, which of those works?
Well, I think it really depends on what outcomes you're looking for. If you're looking to produce high-level instrumentalists that are going to go on to Juilliard, obviously you need a very targeted program for the most gifted students. If you're trying to simply make people aware of music, a general music course is obviously the way to go. But I think the most interesting thing from the work that we did and the work that was done by Audience Insights, which conducted a survey of people across the country, over 25,000 people, and also surveyed orchestra audiences, was the finding that about three-quarters of the people that buy tickets to orchestra concerts today at one time either sang in a choir or played an instrument. And if we are as concerned as I think we should be about the next generation of our audiences for classical music, I'm hoping that whatever they do, it involves some kind of sustained participatory music where kids actually learn to make music and that it's sustained over time so they get the experience. I'll just add that one of the things we have in this country is a system of youth soccer and Little League, mm-hmm. and one of the reasons why we have so many kids that grow up to be sports fanatics is they understand the game. It would be great to have kids grow up out of the public school systems understanding the game of classical music.
Right. Now, that goes back to something else that was in the Magic of Music Initiative, which looked at 15 orchestras over 10 years, and in the report it states that these orchestras, many of them operate in a, quote, fog of assumptions, unquote, about their audience behavior. The main one perhaps being that simply by exposing youngsters to concert programs, that this will develop the next generation of concert ticket buyers. It sounds like, from what your research has shown, that that's not enough, that you really need the participatory aspect of it. And so to come back again to Drew McManus, I mean, it seemed like you were kind of hoping they'd be able to somehow do both, but if you had to pick one, do you think you would come down to the participatory part?
Oh, sure. I think that's going to end up creating exactly what Tom had mentioned of a greater number of individuals who have a better understanding of what music is about, whether they decide to go into having an interest in classical music or anything else. You know, the whole iPod movement now is creating a certainly large enough awareness of music in general. I would like to see schools move more towards that individual participatory program.
Right. There is a sort of participatory program in the New York school system right now, and that is the Young People's Chorus, which is led here in New York by Francisco Nunez, and a portion of which is in residence here at WNYC. And these are kids who are learning to sing music from the inside, and some of them have gone on to become professional musicians. One's even a composer. But they all grow up, and by the time they get out of school, have a real love and appreciation of music. Here's the YPC in action. That's actually the YPC collaborating with Rufus Wainwright. So, you know, here's like a group of kids, and it is a very targeted group, but they're getting to play music. They're going to play music with some really terrific professionals. That was recorded here in our Soundcheck studio. We are speaking about a new music education initiative that features Carnegie Hall and the Juilliard School in the New York public school system with Thomas Wolfe, author of the Magic of Music Initiative Report. He's also the CEO of the arts consulting firm Wolfe, Keynes & Company, and Drew McManus, orchestra consultant and a frequent blogger on artsjournal.com and contributor to Soundcheck. Gentlemen, I mentioned the connection, our Guzulemian leaving Carnegie Hall, going to the Juilliard School. The good folks at the Juilliard School point out that there is an even longer connection, an even more distant one in history, which is that Frank Damrosch, who founded Juilliard in 1905, was not only a member of the musical family that helped get Carnegie Hall going, but he had also been head of music in the New York City public schools prior to founding Juilliard. So the public schools, Juilliard, Carnegie, it's it was all in the family literally 100 years ago, and trying to be so again now. Tom, the Juilliard-Carnegie plan requires the school system to pay $200,000. The total cost for the program is said to be $5 million a year, with Carnegie and Juilliard raising the rest. Is that a good investment?
Oh, I think it's a good investment. I want to go back, though, to something that you mentioned about the connection between Juilliard and the public schools 100 years ago. You know, one of the things that we need to be very conscious of is that the culture that we're living in today is a very different culture. We had between 1920 and 1980 a tremendous burgeoning of classical music in this country, which I think people misread as the growth of indigenous interest in the field of classical music. Actually, what really happened was that there were three cataclysmic events in Europe: the Russian Revolution, the First World War, and the Second World War, and that brought tremendous numbers of Europeans here, both players, but more importantly, audiences that, as they became more affluent in America, became the ticket buyers that built those classical music institutions.
Mm.
The shift recently, of course, is away from immigration from Europe and more toward immigration from the South, with a different kind of cultural awareness. And so what we have today is a new generation which has not grown up with classical music being very much a part of their culture. And so there's a much less demand on the part of audiences, and there's much less concern on the part of schools. So anything that the cultural institutions can do to work with the schools to provide this is very, very important.
But that sort of implies that there's a musical hierarchy in that learning Western classical music, the European tradition, is, you know, perhaps better for you than, you know, if we're talking about a huge population from Latin America coming into the school system. Maybe the way to get in there, you know, to get people interested in music is through traditional forms of music that they might be able to take some ownership of themselves.
Well, I think that the trend that you're seeing among most musical organizations today, even the major symphonies, is a much more worldly view of what should be incorporated. However, I think if we don't want classical music in the more narrow sense to be completely lost, we need to take some responsibility for making sure that those traditions are passed on.
All right. Drew?
Yeah, John, I was going to just jump in there at that one point, because not too long ago I spent some time down in Venezuela with the amazing classical music culture that exists in Caracas. And one of the things that I had noticed was these children were being taught with very traditional Western classical music approaches, but yet they were absorbing all of the natural music that was in their culture and combining that with those traditional Western European ideas. And I think that just goes to show, in the end, regardless of how music had grown from one direction to another, it's still flexible. It's a cultural language that goes beyond individual ideas or even an evolution of one society over another, and it can combine into something greater. It just needs to have that kind of attention.
As it has in Venezuela, where it's not just a great system of choruses and youth orchestras and stuff, but a terrific woman whose name eludes me at the moment, who is sort of driving that whole thing. And that, you know, it really comes down to the people who are involved, and it remains to be seen who will be involved and to what extent. From Carnegie Hall and the Juilliard School in this new initiative. Just announced, it will starting with 16 fellows. The goal for year three is 50 fellows in the schools, actively engaging the kids in the New York public school system. We've been speaking with Thomas Wolfe, author of the Magic of Music Initiative Report, and Drew McManus, blogger at artsjournal.com. Gentlemen, thank you both for chiming in and joining us on Soundcheck this afternoon.
Thank you. As always, it's a pleasure. Thanks, John.
And we'd like to hear from you, too. You can email us with your thoughts, soundcheck@wnyc.org. In a moment, a new take on some old Jewish music from the ghettos of Lodz, Poland. Brave Old World, next on Soundcheck. Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.